to the Wild and Vile Case File Files. I'm your host, Buddy Vile, here with my co-host, Sean Wild.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm assuming you can hear me fine, but if not, this is the point where you'll find out. I know what else I wanted to. I have one happy thing to share and one thing to complain about.
Let's hit it.
I will start with the good news. The good news is I am on day number 30 of my 30 days of no drinking.
Oh, congratulations.
I know. Didn't that fly by?
That did. How'd you celebrate? Stiff drink?
Well, this is the last day. So tomorrow will be when I can drink again. And we'll see. I might go a little bit further, but I'm pretty proud. And then the bad news is I am currently watching, or not currently, but it's on the TV and I have it muted, a Lifetime premiere event. And I have to have it muted to record this podcast.
I'm so sorry to disrupt you in that magical time in your life. We should start doing that. Like, instead of highs and lows, we can do what's wild, what's vile in your life. Like, what's wild, what's really cool, like, what's vile, like, what's keeping you down, pal?
Oh, I don't think I can say most of the things that keep me down because
I was just gonna say, I don't think I can either.
It's probably people that listen to this.
But we got something cool. So this can be my wild for the week. We got the Spotify Wrapped, although I'm a diehard Tidal user, so I actually only get it for the free version. So we got our podcasters version. So like, I don't have the Wrapped for my usual Spotify, although it would literally just be podcasts. That's all I like use Spotify for. Anyway, Tidal like till I Tidal. What?
For like your personal account, you don't have Wrapped?
No, because I have the free version because I use Tidal instead.
Side note on my personal one, my top five songs were all Olivia Rodrigo songs.
I should be getting one for, I've been checking like every day for my like year Wrapped on Tidal because I had one last year.
Yeah, I'm surprised more companies don't do it outside of.
Because it has like my most listened every month and like my most listened for the year. So like so far my most listened is Simon and Garfunkel, Mama Cass, The Kinks, Mama and the Papas, David Bowie, LaRue, Jim Croce, the Isley Brothers, Billy Joel, Taylor Swift, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I was Prince. In the top 1% of Taylor Swift again.
Nice. Congratulations. I feel like I saw a lot of people. I feel like a significant amount because what there's probably, let's say she gets a billion streams. So there's probably, is that a million listeners in the top 1%?
Well, I did the math based off of monthly listeners. So she's got 60 million monthly listeners. So, and yeah, to like beat out everybody on that, I beat like basically, I was in the top 500,000 people that listened to her.
Good for you. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Stephanie was in the top 0.05.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which she had me beat by 9 days of Taylor Swift. Like, 9 straight days.
Damn. Okay, but let's go through our The Wild and Vile Case File Files Spotify Wrapped for podcasters. Let's go. 2021. First things first, you had a lot of firsts this year. It was the first time you put out an episode that was on May 26, 2001. So we've been doing this for 8 months now, and almost 9.
No. That's 7 months.
Okay, sure. Your show has made it new friends in new places. You got your first streams in 2 new countries. And the countries that loved us the most are the United States of America and the United Kingdom. That's funny because we fucking hate the United Kingdom around here.
Yeah. What do they call people?
That's why would Spotify write that? Like, that's super weird of them to write on this, right? Like, why would they hate the United Kingdom?
You call the United Kingdom people. What do they call people? Wankers.
Yeah, you wankers. Go watch some football, you wankers. I don't know why I sound more Boston than whatever. I'm not an accented person. In 2021, you and your fans had a moment, many of them actually. 9 fans listened to you more than any other podcast. Please let us know the 9 of you that is. We would love to hear from each and every one of you. We do have the time for you.
I know one of them is my sister. I mean, it's one of them is somebody.
How did she make time for us and all that Spotify or and all that Taylor Swift on Spotify?
I don't know. It was just Taylor Swift and Wild and Wild. Taylor Swift, Wild and Wild.
8 fans listen to most of your episodes. They're hanging on to our every word. So to the 8 of you, thank you very much for listening to most. How about we get that number up to all? And for the rest of you, please listen to more of our episodes and like follow and subscribe and rate us.
Yes, definitely do all that. But also do that on the other apps you're using besides Spotify, because Spotify is not even, Spotify is only like 28% of our listeners or something like that.
True, true, true. Let us know what you listen on too. Hit us up on our Instagram, Wild and Vile Podcast. We're not sure what they play in outer space, but here's to your fans around the globe who listen to you. 46% of our fans listen to us between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m., making it the most popular time. It's high on their to-do list, they say. We've released 986 minutes of content over 22 episodes. That's pretty good. 986 minutes.
Yeah, I was thinking about how much time that like truly is. Like,
thank you for sharing.
Let's see. That's 16 hours, 16 and a half.
Wow. We have spent a lot of time together recently.
Wow. We almost have released a day's worth of content.
I feel like we listen to way more than How many minutes are in a day? Way more than
60 minutes in an hour. So I divided it by 60 and it was 16.4 hours. So we have 8 more hours to go.
Ugh, we'll get there. This will get us there too, the episode today. This is gonna take a few minutes. So Spotify, start tracking.
Really slow.
I will. So today I'm doing John Wayne Gacy, aka the Killer Clown. So what do you know about John Wayne Gacy before we get into the cases?
Okay, I know for a fact he was a clown. I'm pretty sure he would be a clown in like a kid's ER or like a hospital, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he killed like a bunch of children. But I also, and I don't know if this one is real, but I think he was like the governor or the mayor or something, or he like was, he held office, right?
Yeah, and he was a part of, I think it's called the JC, which is just like a member only like kind of club thing, which was like for businessmen. So it was kind of like your sorority or your fraternity in college where like you helped each other like network and stuff, but it was like for people looking to get management training and make connections. So yeah, he was like very connected in every community that he was in over the years, and like held pretty high office in those groups and was also pretty affiliated with like local politicians and in like the Democratic Party of Chicago at the time.
What is that thing that is in like every town? Oh my God, this is really going to bother me. That like old men are always a part of.
The Masons, Lions Club.
No, but it's so similar. It's like a, oh God, this is going to bother me. It starts with an R. Just go. Sorry. This is
not sure.
It's going to really bother me, but keep going or we're never going to finish the episode.
So Gacy was convicted of killing 33 young men. He was in the Chicago area during the 1970s, and most of his victims' remains were found in the crawl space under his home and in his property, around his property.
Wait. Didn't he have a wife too?
He had 2 wives.
Oh, at the same time?
No, over time with divorce. He did it legally. He was a pretty law-abiding citizen, except for the, you know, the heinous crimes, the heinous crimes that he commits. So here's a brief overview of his timeline. On March 17th, 1942, Mr. John Wacy Wacy Gacy. No, we should probably stop calling this man pet names.
Yeah.
Hold on. I need to take my... I was making a pot roast and it's in my Instapot. That's why I can take it out because I have no idea how to really use it. And so I'm afraid it's going to explode. How good this looks. I know you don't eat meat, but I made like...
But that's what I was laughing at, that you just came back with a little piece of meat on a fork.
Because it needs to cool off, but I want to try it. And then...
No plate or nothing. Also, how unfortunate that this guy's name has gay in it.
I know. He did a number on...
For gay rights.
For gay rights, yeah.
Really set us back a few years.
So just a brief timeline kind of over John Wayne Gacy's life. He was born March 17th, 1942 in Chicago. Between the years 1972 and 1978, Gacy worked as a contractor and as Pogo the Clown at children's parties and children's hospitals, kind of always doing it for free. During this time, he also started luring young men and boys to his home where he would have sex with them and then strangle them to death and then bury them for them never to leave his property. In December 1978, Gacy begins getting police attention after a 15-year-old named Robert Peast goes missing in Dells Plain, Illinois, and it's kind of linked back to John Wayne Gacy. December 12, 1978, police execute a search warrant at Gacy's ranch in Chicago, Illinois, where they find human remains in the crawl space and more bodies surrounding the property buried deep beneath the soil. I think that's where I was trying to go with that.
Do they know what tipped them off?
I mean, go missing, and I think they're like, oh, we saw him with this person, and it, like, he's at, like, by this point he was just on police radar too.
Yeah, well, that's what you get if you're walking or driving around in your car dressed as a fucking Pogo the Clown.
you're gonna raise some eyebrows.
I don't know if people were scared of clowns back then, but I feel like
So March 1980, Gacy is convicted of killing 33 young men and boys. May 1994, Gacy is executed by lethal injection at Stateville Correctional Facility in Illinois. So let's back up a bit, shall we?
Wow, episode over.
Yeah. It's going to be a part two. So part two coming soon. Then we'll get to the good stuff. So backing up a little bit, like I said, he was born in 1942 to a Polish family in Chicago, Illinois. He was the middle of child between two sisters. His father was an auto machinist and a World War I veteran with a taste for alcohol and violence, meaning he was a violent alcoholic.
I feel like every dad in that time period was a violent.
Yeah, before they knew what PTSD was, it was just, my dad's a violent alcoholic. Yes. Yeah. Let's hope that's getting better, but I don't know much about it. Kat, I don't know what you want. Please leave me alone.
Probably descendants of his family lying around. If he has siblings.
There are a lot, and he has kids too.
What?
So in 1949, Gacy's father was informed that his son and another boy were caught sexually fondling a young girl. His father whipped him with a razor sharp strap, which is like a razor sharp, like a strap of some kind, but like something used for whipping. Yeah. That same year, a family friend and contractor for the family would sometimes molest Gacy in the back of his work truck.
Damn, this is like, you know, for these kids, isn't
when it rains, textbook serial killer upbringing.
I just don't understand how, like, all this shit happens to one person.
I know. As a teenager, John Wayne Gacy was often sick and hospitalized. At one point, his appendix burst and was just kind of in and out of the hospital. His dad saw it as a ploy for attention, which he just never, ever gave his son, other than when he was beating the shit out of him.
Could you imagine if your appendix burst and your parents were like, go to bed, you're fake.
Okay, faker, we see you, we hear you, we get it.
Yeah.
At 18, Gacy became involved in politics with the Democratic Party. His dad was really upset by this, calling him a patsy and saying that, like, he's the reason that that kids are soft these days. Also, at this time, Gacy's father bought him a car, which he kept the key, or he allowed him to drive on the sole condition that, like, John would make all of the payments on it. And then after the car was paid off, after a few years, the dad actually would still, like, constantly take the car away from him, like, take the keys away, and then. At one point, John Wayne Gacy got a second set of keys and the dad took like a distributor cap, which I assume makes the car go as cars do. And eventually put the cap back on the car. And Gacy took that as this like opportunity to leave. So he left Chicago and traveled to Las Vegas. At this time, he found work as an ambulance driver, but was later transferred to the mortuary where he slept on a cot in the embalming room of a mortuary at a funeral home.
Why does that not raise red flags? Did people not know anything back then?
No. So later upon his conviction, Gacy confessed to climbing into the coffin of a young boy, embracing and caressing the body before he experienced like deep, deep shock. The next day he called his mom to see if his father would allow him to return home after stealing his own car, which they agreed to. And Gacy returned to Chicago in 1960.
What do you mean he got in deep shock? Like he was so disturbed by what he did?
Yeah, he's like, oh, maybe I don't like dead little boys. I like real boys. After returning home, Gacy enrolled in Northwestern Business College, even though he did not graduate high school. He graduated like basically community college in 1963 and took a job at Nunn-Bush Shoe Company, where he became a management trainee. He was then transferred to Springfield, Illinois, to run his own department of the shoe company, like shoe store. That same year, Gacy became engaged to coworker Marilyn Myers. He also joined the local JCs, which is a leadership training organization, which he eventually became the VP of the Springfield, Illinois chapter.
Gacy the JC.
Gacy the JC, yep. Wacy Gacy the JC. In 1964, Gacy had his second homosexual experience. In other words, he had a second homosexual experience. A colleague of JC, according to Gacy. That's right, I did write it as the rhyme. A colleague of JC, according to Gacy, plied him with drinks and invited him to spend the night on his sofa. He then his colleague performed oral sex on Gacy when he was drunk. So he was saying that, like, that was not warranted at the second time.
Weird. I wonder how many guys have just done gay shit.
Hey, the fuck? Sorry, my dog's like jumping up to my pot roast. Not on my watch. Not on my watch, you bitch. So after 8 month courtship and a slight gay slip, as we'll call it. That's dumb. After a 6 month courtship, Gacy married Marilyn Myers in September 1964. At this time, Marilyn's father purchased 3 KFC restaurants in Waterloo, Iowa. The couple moved there so John could.
He purchased 3 KFCs at once.
Yeah, he like bought all the KFCs, like the franchises, and
in Waterloo. I hope Waterloo is a significant sized town because
he was a big fan of Colonel Sanders and he wanted to be a lieutenant, so he bought 3 KFCs.
I don't know a single town that has more than one KFC besides like a city.
That's a good point. Well, I think it's a decent city anyway. So they moved there so John could manage the restaurants. He was paid $15,000 a year, which is equivalent to $123,000 in 2021. He also received a cut of the annual profits. So like he had shares in the company, in the business as well.
Damn. I forgot what her name was. One of the missing Wyoming women that we did. She worked at Arby's or whatever, and her mom made fucking bank.
Yeah, they paid really well back then before it was like, fast food jobs where like they hire teenagers. Although lucky for John Gacy, they hired teenagers at KFC at this time too.
Jesus. I was like, why would that be lucky for him?
we'll find out.
I didn't pick up right away.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're gonna find out. During this time, Gacy opened a club, quote unquote, in his basement where he allowed his employees to drink and play pool anytime they wanted. He hired male and female teenage employees, but socialized only with the males. He always was giving them alcohol before he made his sexual advantages. And if any of them rebuffed him, he would claim they were jokes and he was doing a test of their morals to like making sure they weren't gay.
Oh, that's like, and it would totally work too, because everybody's so scared of being gay. They'd be like, I just want to make sure. And they're like, I'm okay.
February 1966, John Wayne Gacy had his first son and his daughter was born in March 1967. He later looked back at this time of his life and considered it perfect. His parents visited Waterloo in July 1966 and his father apologized privately to him for the physical and emotional abuse he inflicted. He shook his hand and said, I was wrong about you, son, finally giving him the acceptance he always wanted.
Wow, oh, I want a handshake.
I know. So during this time, Gacy also joined the Waterloo JCs, where he spent 12 to 14 hours a day at KFC and then extended hours late into the night with the JC community, or like with the members. He would also provide like chicken at the meetings and insisted that he would be called, he was called the Colonel. So he took his job at KFC hella seriously.
So his name is John Wayne Gacy, the JC. AKA the Colonel, AKA Pogo the Clown.
Mm-hmm.
He's like Khaleesi from Game of Thrones.
He's also like a part-time magician too, so throw that in there.
Does he have a great magician name? Please tell me he does.
No, he does it like part of his clown routine. But still, multi-hyphen, good for him.
Yeah.
So the Waterloo chapter of JCs were involved in wife swapping, prostitution, pornography, and heavy drug use.
What?
In August 1967, John Wayne Gacy sexually assaulted 15-year-old Daniel Voorhees. He was the son of a fellow JC. Gacy had lured Voorhees to his house to watch a stag film, which is like an old school, like secretly filmed private film, like not smut because no one dies, but like like hardcore sex film that they didn't really have back then.
Yeah, like German dungeon porn.
I don't think this is a time for you to share your expertise on the matter. I think this is a good time for you to be like, oh yeah, interesting. Just
oh, never heard of it.
Maybe we don't. Like, maybe this isn't a rabbit hole we go down. So he lured Voorhees to his house to watch that stag film. He plied him with alcohol and persuaded Voorhees to engage in mutual oral sex with him by saying, you have to have sex with a man before you start having sex with women. Over the course of a few months, Gacy abused other youths, including one who he encouraged to have sex with his wife before he blackmailed him to give him oral sex. So he's like, oh, you know, you're going to sleep with my wife. But first, one quick thing.
Who's this wife? Why did she get roped into this?
I don't think like the wife was in on it, but I think he would just like point and be like, yeah, you can just pop up. I don't want to get, yeah. So several teenagers in Waterloo were tricked when Gacy commissioned them to perform gay shit, or as he called them, homosexual experiments for scientific research, and he paid them $50 each.
What
the? In the name of science.
This is either some, I don't even know. I'm still stuck on the wife thing. I feel like that's some either like really rich people shit or really poor people shit.
Yeah, I would agree. There's no middle. That's not a middle class thing.
Yeah.
So in March 1968, Daniel Voorhees ended up telling his dad what happened with when Gacy sexually assaulted him. And Voorhees Sr. immediately informed police, who then arrested John Wayne Gacy. Charges were for oral sodomy on Voorhees and attempted assault of 16-year-old Edward Lynch. Gacy vehemently denied all charges and demanded to take a polygraph test. The results show that he was really nervous at the time as he was denying it, like as he was denying all the wrongdoing.
Yeah. So keep going. Sorry.
It's okay. Gacy publicly denied any wrongdoing and insisted the charges were politically motivated. So it turned out that Voorhees, like the dad, actually opposed him like the year or like that year for the election. So he was saying that like his dad was like that father was like saying all of this to get him like to get his presidential seat on the JCs.
Yeah.
And so a bunch of the members like thought that was credible and rallied around him.
Wow. Did he also just point out that the kid fucked his wife?
He only offered. He didn't actually fuck his wife.
Oh, I thought you said he did.
No, he offered. He said, hey, you can fuck my wife. He said he could have sex with his wife if he sucked his dick. And then the kid sucked his dick. And then that was the end of the exchange.
I thought it happened the opposite. I thought it actually had happened. I'm sorry.
No, the wife had nothing to know. The wife was untouched. Likely also by John Wayne Gacy. She was untouched. On May 10th, 1968, Gacy was indicted for the sodomy charge. In August 1968, Gacy convinced an employee at the KFC, who was 18-year-old Russell Schroeder, to assault Voorhees and discourage him from testifying against Gacy in his upcoming trial. Damn. Schroeder was promised $300 to beat the crap out of Voorhees. Voorhees ended up being lured to an empty county park where he was sprayed with mace in the eyes, but beaten, but eventually got away and went straight to the police and told him like he knew his attacker was Russell, who then immediately like coined on Gacy and told him what happened.
Yeah, what a wild KFC to be working at.
Yes. So then Gacy was charged with an additional count of witness intimidation and hiring out an assault. So he was just charged with that assault.
Understandably.
Yeah. September 1968, Gacy was ordered to undergo a full psychiatric evaluation at the University of Iowa. Over 17 days, two doctors examined him, and he was diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder, which is the clinical term for sociopath or psychopathy. He was then declared fit for trial.
Maybe you're going to get to it, but this is before or after the murders?
Before.
Wow. Okay.
So this is him ramping up to those. So on November 7th, 1968, Gacy pled guilty to one count of sodomy against Daniel Voorhees, but pled not guilty on the count of the other charges. Okay. He claimed Voorhees offered himself to him, and he did it out of curiosity, although no one believed that story, which is shocking. That sounds so convincing. I was curious. He offered.
Yeah, I guess that is plausible.
So December 3rd, 1968, Gacy was fully convicted of sodomy and sentenced to 10 years in prison. That same day, Marilyn Gacy petitioned for divorce and the court ruled in her favor, awarding her full custody of her children. She got the couple's home and was and Gacy was ordered to pay alimony. So she got like a cut of all of his checks, I think. Gacy never saw his first wife or his children ever again. While incarcerated in the state prison, Gacy was considered a model prisoner. He became the head cook of the prison and eventually joined the inmate chapter of JC, increasing its membership from 50 to 650 men within 18 months. He then secured an increase to the inmates' daily pay who worked in the mess hall, so like all of his employees. So he was able to like really get everyone on his side and look really good. And although his first petition for parole was denied, he was awarded parole with 12 months of probation in June 1970. And then in 1979, Gacy's father died of cirrhosis of the liver, which accounts say that Gacy fell to his floor and started sobbing. And then at that time, too, his request for compassionate leave, which is like being able to leave for a family's funeral, it was denied, so he didn't go to his dad's funeral.
Actually, at this time, he didn't do it. Well, yeah, I don't know. He didn't give a fuck about his dad. Yeah, right.
I know. Well, I think I don't know how that works.
He's a sociopath.
Yeah, I agree. So June 1970, like I said, he was granted parole with 12 months of probation, which the conditions included moving home with his mom and a 10 p.m. curfew, which honestly, I have those same conditions when I moved home after college and like after I came back from L.A., going back to your parents' house. Gacy returned to Chicago, vowing to never return to jail and eventually reestablish himself in Waterloo. Eventually, he then became a short order cook at a restaurant and never returned to Waterloo. On February 12, 1971, 2 months after being granted parole, Gacy was charged with sexually assaulting a teenage boy who claimed Gary lured him from his car from Chicago's Greyhound bus station and offered him a ride home and attempted to force the boy into sex. The charges were dropped after the boy failed to appear in court. And then June 22, 1971, Gacy is arrested and charged with aggravated sexual battery and reckless conduct after he used a fake sheriff's badge to lure a boy to his car and forced him to have oral sex with him. The charges were dropped after the youth blackmailed Gacy, who then like had the police involved. So he's like, I won't testify you on what happened if you give me a bunch of money. And then Gacy's like, I don't have money. So I'm going to tell the cops and get this charge dropped. October 1971, Gacy's parole ended in Iowa and he was a free man because the Iowa Board of Parole did not learn of the incidents in Chicago over those 2 years.
The states weren't connected or what?
Yeah. And like no internet. So like no one's going to like drive it back and forth. Like, hey, you never guess what John Wayne Gacy did.
Yeah.
So November of 1971, all criminal convictions of Gacy are sealed. December 1971, Gacy then bought a ranch style home on West Summerdale Avenue in Chicago. It's kind of like right on the outskirts of like South Chicago, which is now I think a really populated area, but at the time was kind of like middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Between the years of 1971 and 1978, Gacy was very active in his neighborhood and would host annual summer parties at which over 400 guests would come. Each party included a theme and a lot of like local politicians were also in attendance.
Wow, so it's like the Great Gatsby.
Yeah, he was the Great Gatsby, but he killed people. Wait.
Great Gacy.
No, Gatsby kills people too, or kills someone. Although, it turns out Daisy's driving.
Yes. Wow. Do I get twists like this? I feel like there already are.
So August 1971, after moving into the house with his mom, Gacy became engaged to his high school girlfriend, Carol Hoff.
Poor girl.
She was previously married and had two daughters. His mom moved out of the house shortly after the wedding. During the first few months of his marriage, Gacy told his wife that he was bisexual. The couple had sex on Mother's Day of that year, and at that time, Gacy informed Carol that that would be the last time they would ever have sex. He started spending nights away from home and would come back in early hours of the evening, often not alone, and would have a teenage boy with him, and the two would go into the garage.
What?
At one point, Carol went into the garage and found a lot of gay porn, men's wallets, and their belongings, and like random belongings. She confronted John Wayne Gacy about it, and he said this was absolutely none of her business. They later divorced in 1976, but it kind of seemed like it was over money issues, not the whole garage thing.
Okay, I blame her too.
for like not knowing.
Yeah, I mean, like, you could have done a little bit more. Like, you would definitely know.
Yeah, I agree. Like, this isn't Dahmer's grandma. Like, I get the grandma not knowing anything, but, like, I feel like you should figure this out.
Yeah. Like, does she not have any friends that she wouldn't be like, so does your husband have a bunch of gay porn in the garage?
I don't know. So, at some point, Gacy starts a PDM contractor company, which it's a painting design and maintenance company. He did it part-time, but eventually launched it as his full-time job. And by 1978, he was making over $200,000 a year in revenue. So that's like a couple million now.
Yeah. Holy shit.
All of his workers were in high school. He would insist that they do sexual favors for him on like doing overtime, or if like he gave them extra hours or give them like a bonus, or like let them use their truck like for like non-work things, like he would have them pay him back in sexual advantages. During this time, Gacy also joined the Jolly Joker Clown Club, where he ended up creating two characters of Pogo the Clown, who was the happy clown, and Patches the Clown, who was the more serious clown.
Who else is in this club?
Some fucking weirdos. Like, I'm sure, like, this is kind of, like, 10 years from now, like, clowns are kind of going to get all the rights that, like, gay people have now. And, like, it's going to be this whole thing where, like, we were talking about, like, how John Wayne Gacy, like, set the gay community back, like, 20 years. Like, I'm sure he set the clown community back even further.
Oh, he definitely did. Clowns are never going to be cool ever again. I feel like they had to have been, because where did they come from? They're not like a mythical creature. Like, somebody made them, but like for entertainment purposes.
I get like at a carnival and stuff, but I don't get like a hired clown or like, yeah, it's a weird gig. Any clowns, yeah, call in. We have some questions. Do you remember like the 2016, like when people were dressing up like clowns and like, yeah, scaring other people? That was so scary. Like, I'm not even that afraid of clowns, but like that was just like such a terrifying, like, why would you choose to, like, just creepy?
Yeah, it was like a hobby of people's. Like, I don't understand how that, yeah. But I don't know.
So
it was also exciting. Sorry. It was an exciting time to be alive.
Yes, it was. Know? That's true. Like, what's gonna happen? Like, what is this building up to? Like, is there gonna be like a movie that comes out that's like
what's the
paranormal
point?
Activity, but it's like clown and normal activity.
Yeah. And was this just America?
I think so. It's a very American thing. Well, if they have machine guns, then we know it was America. But any other country, yeah, who knows? So Gacy said that he liked being a clown because it allowed him to regress into his childhood. And he would do like everything he did for clowning was for free. He would often also leave his makeup and costume on and then go out to the bar in like his full garb. Later, he became known as the Killer Clown.
Very fitting. Very, yes, creative.
Yes. So there's reports of a couple different PDM workers that ended up living with Gacy over the years. And like they came in and out, and it was kind of just, I didn't read a ton of that. But in 1973, Gacy raped one of his employees while they were on a trip to Florida looking at some property. Once they got back to Chicago, the young man drove to Gacy's house, like had him come outside and just beat the absolute shit out of him. And Carol was still living with him at the time. So he told her it was like over a
work thing.
Yeah, work. Like he was like back on pay. And so like was really upset about it. He also raped and sexually attacked and abused several other of the employees.
I understand how this doesn't come to light, but
I know.
I just don't understand. This is why I don't believe history happened, because
I totally get what you mean.
This stuff can happen and somebody not get caught for a super long time, and then somehow
keep going.
Sewer lines in a whole entire city. I just don't get it.
Oh, I know. So now we're gonna get to the murders. So like I kind of said up top, like over, like in the end, he ended up admitting that he killed 33 people. 26 bodies were found in the crawl space of his house and on his property. These victims included people he knew and random strangers. He would lure people from the bus station in Chicago, the Bug House, also known as Washington Square Park, and just like randomly on the street. He would offer them jobs at his company. He would give them drugs and he would offer them money for sex. Some were even grabbed by force. Others conned into believing he was a police officer because he carried around a badge and his Oldsmobile had a large spotlight on it, which made him look even more like a cop. He would lure victims to his house and sometimes did what he would call doubles, which is he would do two victims in one night.
What is this, fucking tennis?
I know. Like, so that's just... weird.
That's
like
so weird.
Confidence that... or like just killing a person, be like, oh, not enough, still hungry.
Okay, wait, time out. I have a real question about this. He called it doubles, or like the people who were investigating him?
He called them doubles. He's like, oh yeah, I would do that on my doubles night.
But nice. Like, that's weird to create a lingo, even though you're not talking to somebody else about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's weird.
I don't have like a work lingo, but like I don't have any slang that I just keep personally to myself. Like, I call that one a double.
Okay, no, you're right. I don't think I do either. So we're gonna go through his modus operandi, aka, for all you non-true crimers out there, how he killed people, like what, how he did it. Yeah. So kind of like I mentioned through all of these stories, he would ply young men with drinks and drugs and do magic tricks, which was pull out handcuffs and be like, you want to see me escape out of these? Like, this is my first trick. And he would like put the handcuffs on, like do a few twirls, and then like release himself with the key that he would hide in between his fingers. And then he'd be like, here, I can teach you this magic trick. And then have the people turn up, put the handcuffs on themselves. And then he would just be like, oh, the trick is you have to have this key, and then like put the key away. And then just do whatever he wanted to these people because they had just bound themselves.
So fucking terrifying.
Yes. And he said, like, he would say that he had like certain things he would say, and that was like step one of his process. And he would like keep going and like do his like little tricks for them. So with his victims restrained, he would then rape and torture them, like force his captors to perform fellatio on him. He would burn cigars into their skin and sodomize them with dildos, pill bottles, and other objects around his garage.
Okay. I'm not even going to go. Well, no, I will go there. If he made them give him head.
Yeah.
Look, I'm so shocked that one of these 33 people did not bite his dick off.
I mean, I can't say what I would do in that situation.
No, because you're scared for your life. So I get that, like.
Yeah, you don't want to do it.
I'm surprised that one out of 33 just didn't say, fuck it.
Oh, they're going to end up dead anyway. Yeah. I mean, he's probably not going to brag if that happened, but no reports of any brave biters out there. So he would mangle them or like shackle them to a 2x4 with like handcuffs on either side, which was a technique inspired by Dean Carroll. He was a serial killer in Texas where he killed 28 teenage boys in Houston, Texas between 1970 and 1973. So I think I might do him next.
I've never even heard of that person.
No, me either. It was like the Houston mass murders, and so that was what inspired like Gacy to do it that way. So he would murder his victims by placing a rope around their neck and tightening it with a hammer handle. He liked to call this the rope trick, telling them this was his final trick. Most died within an hour or two, which he said he liked watching them convulse and squirm while it happened.
He was real sick.
Yes, all of his victims were killed between the hours of 3 and 6 a.m. After death, Gacy would store their bodies under his bed for up to 24 hours before burying them in his crawl space, where he poured quicklime on them to hasten decomposition. So that's like a really heavy draw, like chemical. Some of the bodies were taken to his garage and embalmed before being buried. His first known murder His first murder.
It sounds like Cardi B.
That's exactly what I thought. I felt like I was saying it super weird. The first known murder occurred on January 3rd, 19. Like, I feel like I'm still pausing over occurred. The first known murder occurred on January 3rd, 1972. Timothy McCoy was 16 years old when Gacy lured him from the bus terminal in Chicago, where he was traveling from Michigan to Omaha. Gacy took him on a sightseeing tour around Chicago and then to his home and told him he had a place to sleep for the night. Gacy claimed that he woke up the next morning to see McCoy standing in his bedroom with a large kitchen knife in his hand. He stood up and started beating, like trying to get the knife away from McCoy, who slashed Gacy's arm. And then they jumped and fought. And then eventually John Wayne Gacy stabbed McCoy repeatedly in the chest. After he was dead, Gacy went up into the kitchen to wash the knife and saw that there were eggs and bacon set on the table, and the table had been set for two people. He then buried the body in the crawl space. John Wayne Gacy said, "That's when I realized that death was the ultimate thrill." So like the kid had made them breakfast and was like, "Hey, breakfast is ready," and he just like freaked out and killed him, and then realized like, "I like this."
Weird.
That's, so that's like, all that I wrote, but I can go. Yeah, so I think that's going to be the end of part one on this one, because I haven't done anything into like the rest of the murders, and we have a lot to go.